Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
And we are back with Chris Ferguson, Dr. Chris Ferguson from Stetson University. And we have been talking about gaming and the effects on the brain. So if people are using this a little too much, what is the actual antidote to help them get back to balance in life?
Yeah, it's a great question. In most situations, the good news about, you know, when we talk about like gaming disorders, you know, when you see like the newspaper headlines, they oftentimes put it in very sensationalist, stark terms, sort of like the video games or like digital heroin and stuff like that. And the reality is in most cases, what's happened for someone is that they've just let things go out of balance, and there's like a lack of structure, you know, in terms of establishing clear time limits on what they need to do and, you know, what they want to do. So, you know, as a clinical psychologist, sometimes, you know, I've worked with families who express having issues with their usually teenage or preteen kids in their love for video games, and they worry about, you know, their schoolwork and such. And in most situations, what kind of has happened is the parent is kind of looking for some advice about how to establish structure. You know, and we say in most of these cases that, you know, perhaps the child has something that looks like a mild behavioral regulation type of disorder. So the advice we usually have that clears up the majority of cases is that we try to establish a structure. And I'm going to use a little bit of psychology jargon here, but yeah, a structure where we reward low base rate behaviors with high base rate behaviors. So basically, it's a fancy way of saying we reward people for doing stuff they don't want to do by letting them do stuff they do want to do. You know, so basically, the argument is that you want to establish a structure where the child or teen, you know, has to do their needed activities first. You know, they have to do their schoolwork. They have to do their chores. They have to spend a little time exercising, whatever they need to do, you know, for an established period of time. And then they get rewarded with an established period of exposure to their video games or TV or, you know, whatever kind of screen media that they, you know, want to engage in. So you might say, you know, if you do your homework for an hour, I'll let you have a half hour of video game time or an hour of video game time. You know, and go back and forth, you know, with things like that. In most cases, that kind of clears up, you know, the issue. So it's really a structural issue, you know, within the family. It just kind of needs to be established. For a smaller number of cases, that might not do it. And usually in that case, there's something bigger going on. In other words, the teen or child may be experiencing some depression, or another mental health issue, and they're using the games to self-medicate, essentially. You know, basically, real life stinks, but the game universe is positive. So, you know, why would you want to spend more time in real life when the fictional world is so much more, you know, enriching? And in that case, I usually advise, you know, that the family seek professional help from a psychologist or psychiatrist who specializes in children and adolescents. What I generally do not advise is going to a specialty clinic for like gaming or gaming disorder. And my concern is that a lot of those clinics, at least at present, may be a bit more predatory. You know, they oftentimes are charging huge amounts of money for therapy that has not been established as effective at this point. So my advice is to go to a psychologist or psychiatrist who is, you know, licensed and specializes in adolescents, and particularly looking for like cognitive behavioral therapy, which is known to be helpful and effective for teens with mental health issues. So that's what I think is probably the best road, is to see if establishing the structure works first. If it doesn't, it, again, may be a red flag that there's something larger going on in terms of the mental health of that particular particular child. I mean, oftentimes, you know, what people see as gaming disorder can mask, you know, other problems. You know, a kid may be staying home playing video games and not going to school, not because they're addicted to the video games, but because there's something wrong at school, you know, that they may be bullied or there may be something else that's going on. So you really want to dig a little deeper and find out what it is that's causing the person to engage with games and not engage with their, you know, real life, basically.
So, Chris, could you show us from a practical, from some of your practical work, how people can get the same kind of rush out there in other ways besides drugs to kind of fit that in and give them? Have you seen them be able to find things in real life that could give them that kind of hit?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, we don't want to just move their addiction to something else entirely. I mean, it's about balance. I mean, you find a number of people who may be overdoing it with games, and you know, basically, if you provide a structure for them, they can still play video games,
right?
But they learn how to balance that better with the other things in life that they need to do, and that's one thing that's different from, like, you know, like heroin, right? We don't talk about that with, like, heroin dependency. We don't talk about, like, appropriate heroin time, you know, or things like that, or balancing your heroin with other things that you need to do, you know. So there obviously is a distinction between these same types of behavioral regulation or behavioral overuse issues and, you know, other sorts of substance abuse and such. But, yeah, I mean, you see people that, I mean, you know, eat clinically who have, you know, overuse issues with a wide variety of activities, where you get sports enthusiasts who, you know, are engaged with their sport and they're neglecting their relationships and their academics and all kinds. Yeah, so, you know, we don't want to just simply sort of move things from one overuse to, you know, to another one. But it is all a matter of finding, you know, balance. So if the concern is that a person has, like, only one hobby, and is devoting too much time to just that one hobby, then it may be an issue of figuring out having a dialogue, you know, talk to your kid about what is it that they're getting, you know, from playing their video games. You know, is it the fantasy, you know, exploration, the creativity? Is it the socialization? And then you might want to search around, you know, see other sorts of activities that have some of the same, you know, elements. So you may be able to find certain types of, you know, the child, for instance, like the competitiveness and the social aspects of playing video games online, then there may be other activities in real life that they might also enjoy that are competitive and social. You know, you have them join a sports club or a dodgeball club or something of that sort that they, but it may take a little bit of, you know, trial and error for that, you know, teen or child or adult to find something else that they like as much as games. But yeah, both in positive and negative ways, you definitely do see people engage with other activities with as much passion, you know, as with games. We actually have done some research at Stetson with kids who overdo books, which is, I know it sounds weird to probably a lot of your listeners, but we do find, like, you know, actually in some ways bigger correlation. I don't know, maybe overdo is a strong way of putting it, but, you know, we did one study going back in 2015 where we found that there was a correlation between, you know, heavy book reading and mental health issues, actually. These were, like, these young adults, like The Hunger Games and Harry Potter, like those types of books, that there was a small group of mostly girls who read just tons and tons and tons of these books, and also, you know, were rated by their parents as being more depressed and having other sorts of issues. Now, of course, it might be like games. They may be turning to the books because they're, you know, it doesn't mean the books cause their depression.
Right.
But you do see this sort of, you know, perhaps excessive engagement, you know, it's actually fairly common among people who are stressed or who have depression or anxiety. You know, to some extent, that's a good thing in a sense that they're trying to do something, you know, to relieve their negative mood. But we want to make sure they keep that in balance with the other things that they need to do as well.
Okay. I have to admit, I've never gamed or played games, but there's a lot of people in the family that do. And I'm wondering, is there, if we were equating it to, like, a food disorder, or would there be more nutritious games to put into them? Is there a greater quality in some of them? Are they actually expanding something in a good way?
Yeah. I mean, the good news is that, you know, of course, there was the whole issue going back several decades about the more aggressive games, you know, the shooter games, things like that. It turned out that they're fine. There really didn't emerge this kind of evidence that, you know, Call of Duty and games like that caused any kind of, you know, aggression or violent behavior in the youth that, you know, played them. But, you know, that having been said, I mean, there certainly are some games that are, you know, do have some educational components to them. I think the most effective ones are games that kind of sneak that content in. So it's the players don't even know that they're learning necessarily while they are. A lot of strategy games, historical strategy games are like that, where you might actually learn about, you know, you get to play as the Roman Empire, you know, and as you're trying to take over the world of the Roman Empire, you're actually kind of learning about the Roman Empire.
Right.
You just don't really realize it, you know. So I think those are actually in some ways more effective than, you know, a lot of educational games that aren't really that much fun. You know, so if you can get people to learn without realizing they're learning it, there's actually been a lot of research on Minecraft of all games, and not necessarily playing sort of the generic Minecraft, but a lot of schools have taken Minecraft and incorporated, you know, educational aspects into the game. So basically, and I'll use an example from my own, you know, family. But my son, a couple years ago, was in a Minecraft camp that focused in on the Underground Railroad. And, you know, he was maybe like 11 or 12 at the time. And, you know, I could say at 11, he didn't care at all about the Underground Railroad, but he did love Minecraft. Mm-hmm. And so in this camp, he learned a ton about his motivation was to play Minecraft. But in the process of doing so, he learned about, you know, the Underground Railroad, you know, all that. So it's kind of things like that can be a good way of, like, you know, getting a little bit of education you know, in with the games. You know, playing games in general is pretty well demonstrated to be stress reducing, which is probably part of the reason that people overdo them to some extent, is because they are trying to reduce their stress. But they are effective in that respect. There's some back and forth regarding whether they train things like hand-eye coordination, you know, and visual spatial cognition. A bit of a debate on that. And I think, you know, even if we talk about sometimes we exaggerate the negatives about games, you know, there are some positives that sometimes get exaggerated to you. So, like, video games are not going to prevent your Alzheimer's, you know, or make you more intelligent. You know, there's some headlines about that stuff as well, but the evidence really never worked out very well, you know, in that respect. I mean, the main positive, of course, is that games are fun. You know, video games are fun, and I think we spent maybe three decades now trying to find some, like, bigger existential thing they do that changes our fundamental human nature, and probably they don't. You know, for the most part, probably video games are mostly just fun.
Dr. Ferguson, we're going to have to call time on this, too. Our interview time is up, but thank you so much for being on the radio today and sharing all your wisdom on gaming and how it can be used for fun and where the edge is.
It was a lot of fun being on today, and happy to be here.